dim those a little, Danny? The lights blinding me right here. Yeah, that'd probably be better. Really excited to be here with you guys tonight and be able to continue where we left off last week in a series of messages that I think have been, I need them. They're messages for me. But I think at the same time, they're messages that affect all of us. We all, at one point or another, become discouraged. Sometimes we have really good reasons to become discouraged. Sometimes we have really good reasons to become discouraged. But whether we have a good reason or not, discouragement is something that is hurtful. It's something that is not good. Something that for our own health, our own mental health, emotional and spiritual health, it's not good. So we need to be able to deal with it. And so last week we started the series and we called it a pity party pooper. And just as a brief review, in case you weren't here, we defined a party pooper. We defined a pity party and then we defined a party pooper so that we could get the idea of where we're going with this. And according to the Urban Dictionary online, a pity party is a way of experiencing grief in which you spend your time feeling sorry for yourself and whining endlessly about how crappy your life is. And so that's a pity party. And typically, pity parties are not very useful. They're not effective in really dealing with discouragement or grief. They really don't do a lot for us. And then we defined a party pooper, according to the Urban Dictionary, as a person who ruins a party by either stopping the fun or not participating in a certain activity. So that's a party pooper. Typically, nobody likes party poopers because they ruin the fun. So what do I mean when we say we're called to be party poopers? Well, we're called to ruin pity parties. We're called to, in other words, we're called to encourage one another. We're called to come alongside people that are discouraged and hurting and sad and depressed and speak life into them and help them and lift them up and walk with them and help them overcome. And last week, we looked at the life of Barnabas, you know, who was nicknamed the Son of Encouragement. What a nickname, huh? Son of Encouragement. Tells you a lot about him. And we saw how he stood beside Paul at a critical time in Paul's life where Paul could have had a pity party and gotten very depressed and discouraged. Barnabas was there to help him and to push him and to make sure that he didn't get stuck in discouragement. He came alongside John Mark, young kid, you know, who made a mistake. And Barnabas came along. Paul didn't want to forgive him the mistake. And Barnabas came alongside and encouraged him and lifted him up and helped him take the step. And the results were tremendous because Barnabas' intervention into Paul's life made a huge difference. Paul became the missionary that he became, you know, founded so many churches, wrote so many books in the New Testament, just an incredible man. And his intervention into John Mark's life also proved to be incredibly profitable. And John Mark was a writer of the Gospels, a missionary too, and even Paul recognized later, you know what, he's become a very useful person in the ministry. Had Barnabas not been there as an encouragement, these people would have crashed. Had Barnabas not been there to encourage them, they would have crash landed. And their life story would have been totally different. We also saw last week that Barnabas encouraged the local church. There was a local church that was doing really well, and they were coming under criticism, and Barnabas stood by them and said, "You guys got to stop criticizing this church. They're doing well." And he just encouraged that church in a tremendous way. So tonight, I want us to consider the life of two people that were really, their actions earned them a place in the pity party hall of fame. These people just, they threw a party and they knew how to do it when it came to having, you know, this pity party and feeling bad about themselves and thinking how bad their life was and all of these things. And at the same time, more importantly, I want us to consider how God used pity party poopers to help them overcome. God put people in their lives, and in one case, God himself came in and said, "You know what? That's enough. Get up. No more pity parties. We got to do something." And so I want us to look at their lives And I think we're going to pick up a lot. We're going to learn a lot from this because we all struggle with these areas. We all struggle with discouragement. At one time, I don't care how strong you are, there comes a time in everybody's life where bad stuff happens and ugly things happen and we suffer discouragement. And so how does the Bible deal with it? You start looking at Bible characters and you start seeing human beings that were not this fictitious, all-perfect character. These people suffered. These people went through discouragement. These people had tremendous victories, and they also had tremendous downfalls. And it's amazing to me. It's really encouraging to me to see how God deals with it, because that's how God deals with our discouragement in the same way. So the first person we're going to start with is King David. And when discouragement, this is when discouragement makes you lose focus of the big picture. There came a time in King David's life where he suffered incredible discouragement, and it made him lose focus on the big picture of everything that was happening around him. And I want you to open your Bibles in 2 Samuel 19. That's the first of the two characters we're going to look at. 2 Samuel 19, and we're going to see why David is in the Pity Party Hall of Fame. Because he could really throw one. 2 Samuel 19. Starting with the first verse. Let me give you a little background right before we read that. Let me give you some background. There's a huge conflict. There's a war going on. And the sad thing is that the battle is between a father and a son. David is the king, and his son Absalom has declared war on his father and has done everything he can to destroy his father's life, to destroy his father's other children, to destroy his father's kingdom. He has gone out to fight with his father. And David's army and David's loyal men and David's, you know, followers were not going to let this happen. And so the battle got intense, and Absalom's army was coming after David to kill him. And Israel's armies and David's armies were saying, there's no way we're going to let that happen, not on our watch. He's the anointed king of Israel. He's the man of God. Now, notice, David had not been perfect, okay? David was far less than perfect. David had really messed up. But his armies and his people knew that he was the man of God, and they were backing him up. And so they get into a battle, and Absalom dies in the battle. News comes to David. Hey, the battle's over. Good news. We won. You are safe. Your family's safe. Everybody's safe. You're good. We took care of it. He asked the first messenger, but is Absalom safe? And he doesn't answer. He says, well, I don't know. He lied. Then he asked the second messenger, is Absalom safe? And that messenger says to him, well, king, may all of your enemies end up like Absalom. In other words, he's dead. And King David lost it. Pity party. Oh, Absalom, my son Absalom, and Absalom. He's yelling, he's running up and down. Oh, my son Absalom, I can't believe that. I wish I would have died instead of Absalom. But mind you, he's having a public pity party, and all these people that just fought for him are listening to him and saying, what? What are we hearing? What are we listening here? That's the background of what is happening in this story. So let's pick it up in chapter 19, verse 1. Word soon reached Joab. Joab was the general of the king's army. He was the guy in charge of all of David's military. Word soon reached Joab that the king was weeping and mourning for Absalom. As all the people heard of the king's deep grief for his son, the joy of that day's victory was turned into deep sadness. They crept back into town that day as though they were ashamed and had deserted in battle. The king covered his face with his hands and kept crying, oh, my son Absalom, oh, my son Absalom, my son, my son. When Joab, the king, went to the king's room and said to him, we saved your life today. and the lives of your sons and your daughters and your wives and your concubines. Yet you act like this, making us feel ashamed of ourselves. You seem to love those who hate you and hate those who love you. You have made it clear today that your commanders and troops mean nothing to you. It seems that if Absalom had lived and all of us would have died, you would be pleased. Now go out there and congratulate your troops. For I swear by the Lord that if you don't go out, not a single one of them will remain here tonight. Then you will be worse off than ever before. So the king went out and took his seat at the town gate. And as the news spread throughout the town that he was there, everyone went to him. Okay, so this is a tough situation, okay? David is caught between a rock and a hard place. David is in a situation that doesn't have an easy answer. There's no solution, pretty much, that's going to be a good solution. And sometimes we find ourselves in those situations. Sometimes we put ourselves there, and sometimes we just find ourselves there for no particular reason of our own. But those situations where there's no win-win, when, you know, no matter what happens, there's going to be a loss. No matter what happens, there's going to be suffering. That's a tough place to be in. You see, David is battling between he's the king and he's a father. As a king, he has to rejoice in the victory that they just had over his enemies. As a father, he just lost his son. And no matter how bad his son was, it was still his son and he loved him. David was in a situation between Absalom as an enemy and Absalom as a son. At what point does Absalom stop being my son? Because he's trying to kill me? That would probably be a good point for an outsider, but for a father, he's still my son. It's a battle David is fighting. He's struggling between winning a war and the cost of winning that war, losing a son. So no matter how you look at it, David is not going to win here. No matter how you look at it, David is not going to win here. So that's a tough place to be. But David had to do something as king. He could not lose focus of the big picture. He could not. He could not give himself the luxury of losing focus of the big picture because he was the king. And he had to lead the people and he had to be their king. Regardless of what was happening in his heart, he needed to be king. So he lost focus. His pity party had incredible, devastating effect on the people. David's pity party discouraged the entire army. I mean, wouldn't you be discouraged? If you're fighting for somebody and they don't appreciate anything you've just done, that would be pretty discouraging. If you just gave your king a victory over his enemies and he's not happy, he's crying about it, what, did he expect me to lose and then he would be happy? It was very discouraging to the people. And there's a first quick lesson for us to learn there. When we are discouraged, it discourages the people around us. It does. When we get discouraged, we can't help it. The people around us get discouraged. You get contaminated. It's contagious. It's contagious. Discouragement is contagious. The same way that when you're excited, the people around you can get excited. Emotions are like that. You know, we tend to go with the flow of where emotions are at. But David's discouragement discouraged his entire army. His pity party kept him from seeing the big picture. What's the big picture here? The big picture is that his life and the lives of the people he loved was saved. They saved him. They saved his other wife. They saved his other children from death. That's the big picture. The big picture is that we saved a lot of lives today that were not going to be saved, that were going to be dead. He lost sight of the fact that your men fought valiantly. Many of them died defending you to bring you this victory. There's people that are dying for you. There's people that are giving their lives for you. There's husbands that didn't come home tonight and they left their wives and their children alone because they died in the battlefield to save you, King. That's the big picture. How can you lose sight of that? How can you lose sight that you know your men expect to be appreciated for what they do for you? They've made a sacrifice for you. They expect at least you to be content, to congratulate them on the victory that you've just gotten. So he totally lost sight of it. Now, discouragement often keeps us from recognizing what other people have done for us. When we become discouraged, we fail to see anything good that has ever happened to us. We fail to see it. We fail to see what the good things happening in our life. We focus on the negative. 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 And you miss the good things. Because good things happen in our lives. Every day good things happen in our lives. The fact that you're alive today, that's a good thing that happened in your life. Some people didn't wake up this morning. The fact that we have health, that's something that's good that's happening in our lives. There's a lot of things. There's people that love you, people that care for you, and discouragement just blinds us to that. It's not that we don't appreciate it. Don't misunderstand me. David appreciated his people, but he wasn't showing it. What was the message he was showing them? Exactly what Joab told them. Hey, what? Would you be happy if all of us would have died and your son would have lived? Would that make you happy? Is that how much our lives are worth to you? Because that's what he was conveying. That was the message he was giving. And David's pity party had to stop before it would be the end of the kingdom and his reign. And so his man, Joab, came up and helped David refocus on the big picture. Now, sometimes God places people in our lives that can see the big picture, even in the midst of all the turmoil, that they can see clearly the big picture. This is what's happening. And we need those people in our lives to come and tell us, hey, stop. You need to stop. Joab, what Joab did with his words was come by David and slap him across the head. Hey, wake up, slap out of it. What are you doing? What are you thinking? He had that level of confidence and that level of relationship with David that he could come in there and tell David like it is. You can't be David's general of his army and run his armies if you don't have his ear and you can't be honest with him and tell him, here's how it is. This is what's happening. And that's exactly what he did. He helped them refocus. Sometimes God gives those people courage to confront us with a reality check. And we need that. All of us need a reality check sometimes. All of us. And listen. Listen. Allow yourself to be corrected. Allow yourself to be slapped out of your stupor and put back in focus in what needs to happen. Because God allows people to do that. I know in my life I lose focus sometimes, and God has put somebody in my life that she helps me refocus. And she'll tell me, this is what it's like, and you're missing the picture, and this is what it is. And it's like, you know, you're right. Because when you're in the middle of it, you don't see things clearly. When you're in the middle of a problem, all you see is the problem. Everything is so big. You get discouraged, and all you see is discouraging, and everything you interpret as discouraging. And everything that happens, you find a way to make it a bad thing that happened. And you need somebody to come and slap you and say, stop, stop, stop. Refocus. And that's what Joab did. What does Joab do? He confronts him with very strong words. He says to him, you make us feel ashamed of having saved your life and your family. How does that work? How can you make us feel ashamed of doing what is right? We just saved your life and we're all ashamed of it because you're so upset. You love your enemy and seem to hate us. What's the deal here? You should love the people that love you and saved your life. You seem to value Absalom's life more than all of ours. This is what he's telling him. You need to go out there and congratulate your troops, or they're going to leave you. Hey, David, we're leaving. If this is how you feel, we're out of here, man. And guess what? You're going to be worse off than you have ever been in your life because you will have no protection. We're out. This is serious. Joab understood how serious the situation was, and his job was to tell David like it is. This is what it is. Now, please understand this. David's reaction is a human reaction. He just lost a son. His problem is that the big picture is I'm the king. And I can lock myself in my room and cry until tomorrow morning for Absalom. But when I'm standing in front of the people, I need to lead the people. I have to congratulate them. I have to keep my personal heartbreak separate from my job and my ministry and my calling and what I have to do. And that's where David messed up. He lost sight of his mission, his job. And his job was to just go forward and do what God had called him to do. Now, I want you to notice a couple of things about David that we can learn from here. A couple of great things. First of all, notice his reaction. He doesn't get angry at Joab. He doesn't get angry at Joab. We learn a lot from that. We need to be able to be sensitive to people who step into our lives and confront us with reality and give us a reality check. We need to be responsive. He could have gotten mad at Joab. He's the king. He could have said, hey, how dare you speak to me like that? I'm the king. If I want to mourn, I'm going to mourn. And if you don't like it, your head's coming off. He was the king. But he didn't react that way. He listened to Joab. He listened. Even in his mourning, even in his grief, even in his, with all of his authority, he was able to listen. That's a lesson for us. Notice he has a teachable spirit. We need to have a teachable spirit. Sometimes somebody has to correct us. Somebody has to teach us. Somebody has to tell us, hey, what you're going about this in the wrong way. This is the way you should be handling this. And if we have a teachable spirit, we'll look at it, we'll evaluate it, and we'll say, you know what, you're right. Or you know what, I don't agree with you, but you give it consideration. Some people know they will not accept correction. Some people will not accept advice. Some people will not, no matter what, I know. There are people that I try to help and say, look, I don't think you should be, oh my gosh, they go off the wall. They go psycho, ballistic. You think they're going to have a coronary. Why? I'm trying to help you. Let yourself be teachable. Let yourself be influenced by people that God puts in your life. Because that's what they're there for. David was teachable. And notice how he immediately refocuses on the big picture. We also have to do that. He immediately said, you know what, Joab, you're right. He went outside, gathered the people, and it doesn't tell us so, but it says the people came to him. So what did he do? He congratulated them on the great victory. He thanked them for their sacrifice and what they had done. And even though his heart was broken, he was able to do what he needed to do and do the right thing. In other words, sometimes we need to move on in spite of the pain. Sometimes we need to move on even if our heart is broken. Sometimes we need to move on even, and listen, nobody's going to blame David for being upset. He lost the son. But you're going to blame him for not being a good king and not being, you know, respectful and grateful for the people that have just saved your life. There's a no win. We knew that going in. There's no way to win this. But of all the possible outcomes, this was the best outcome. Your life was saved. Your wife's lives were saved. Your other children's lives were saved. Your kingdom was saved. And the guy who wanted to kill you is now dead. Best possible outcome. And he had to respond to it. So David had the pity party. Hall of Fame pity party. And Joab was the party pooper. No, you got to stop this, David. And thank God that he did. You continue reading the story. And David was able to recover his kingdom that Absalom had taken away. He was able to go back into the city and the palace that was once his palace, and Absalom had taken it away. He was able to get a lot of what he had lost back. It was a good thing. Had he not responded well that night, he would have lost all of his followers. And he would not have gotten back in the palace, and he would not have gotten back in the throne, and he would have lost everything. Discouragement can lead you down a road that you lose everything. You can hear stories of people that become discouraged, and they stop working, and they lose their families, they lose their careers, they end up drinking, they go, or drugs. I mean, their life just falls apart. Because a pity party has no way to end. A pity party has no, it'll end, it'll go on forever until you die. Unless you stop and you say, wait a minute, that's not what I need to be doing. My life is not as bad as I think it is. Not when God has a purpose with my life. Not when God is going to use me. And that takes us to our second story. When discouragement makes you want to quit everything. When discouragement makes you want to quit everything. And sometimes, trust me, discouragement does that. It makes you want to quit. Sometimes you want to quit life. Realistically, some people, it comes a point in your life where you say, what's the point of even living? What's the point of living? You know, I joke around sometimes with my wife and I say, you know what? I'm going to the bridge on 27th and I'm jumping, you know? Because we laugh that it's not a very high bridge, but the Miami River is so dirty that you break your head when you hit it and you die. You know, it's like, you don't drown, you die of trauma. And it's like, sometimes you don't want to live. And sometimes you want to quit everything and you say, what's the point? And that happened in the life of a story that we've read so many times. That's Elijah. Elijah. Background. This is in 1 Kings 19. Elijah, tremendous victory. Just defeats all the Baal worshipers, kills all of them. God sends fire from heaven. We've read the story a million times. But I want you to focus on the pity party. He gets threatened that he's going to be killed. And the party is on. The party is on. 1 Kings 19, starting in verse 3. He was threatened to death, so Elijah was afraid and fled for his life. He went to Beersheba, a town in Judah, and he left his servant there. Then he went on alone into the wilderness, traveling all day. He sat down under a solitary broom tree and prayed that he might die. Listen to his prayer. I have had enough, Lord. He said, take my life, for I am no better than my ancestors who have already died. Then he lay down to sleep under the broom tree. That's it. Take my life, Lord. I want out of here. I want out of here. So he laid down, slept under the broom tree. But as he was sleeping, an angel touched him and told him, get up and eat. He looked around, and there beside him, his head, was some bread baked on hot stones and a jar of water. So he ate and drank, and he lay down again. Then the angel of the Lord came again and touched him and said, get up and eat some more, or the journey ahead will be too much for you. So he got up, and he ate and drank, and the food gave him enough strength to travel 40 days and 40 nights to Mount Sinai, the mountain of God. There he came to a cave, where he spent the night. But the Lord said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? And he replied, I've zealously served the Lord God Almighty, but the people of Israel have broken their covenant with you, torn down your altars, and killed every one of your prophets. I am the only one left, and now they're trying to kill me too. And the Lord told him, I skipped a few verses. Verse 15, the Lord challenges him and says, you know what? You need to go back the same way you came, travel to the wilderness of Damascus. When you arrive there, anoint Hazael to be king of Aram, then anoint Jehu, grandson of Nimshi, to be king of Israel, and anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat, from the town of Abel Meloah, to replace you as my prophet. Verse 18, I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. Elijah, the first thing I want you to notice was he was exhausted. He was exhausted. After he had his pity party, he just collapsed and fell asleep. He was mentally exhausted, physically, emotionally, spiritually, you name it. He had been through so much in such little time that he was exhausted. And the first lessons come to us there from this story. Exhaustion is usually a catalyst for discouragement. Exhaustion usually leads to discouragement. We need to fight exhaustion. We need to find a way of having rest and relaxation in our lives. We got to plan it into our schedules. And I'm talking to myself because I don't. But exhaustion leads to discouragement. What happens is when you're exhausted, you become overwhelmed. Everything is overwhelming when you're exhausted. When you're fresh and you have energy, you can tackle anything. When you're exhausted, you don't want to tackle anything. Everything becomes overwhelming. Think about anything in your life. Think, if you work out, think about working out. When you wake up in the morning, you're fresh and you go work out, you have energy, you hit those weights and you do whatever you got to do. But if you worked all day and you're super tired and it's 7 o'clock at night and you get to the gym and you look at the weights, it's like, really? Like, you want me to lift that? It becomes overwhelming because you're exhausted. And Elijah was there. He was just burned out. Imagine how exhausting it was, his whole ordeal with the Baal people. You just go back and you see what his life was like for the past few months, and it was nonstop problem. He was just dead, exhausted. And he wants to give up. He just wants to give up everything. Listen to his words. I have had enough. Have you ever said that? Have you ever thought that? I've had enough. That's it. Yeah, no more. I'm done. That's it. I've had enough. I can't take it anymore. That's what he's saying right now. Lord, I can't take it anymore. Yeah, stop. Why don't I just die? Because I can't handle a single thing else. And that's what he says. Take my life. I want to die. That's a pity party. Like, heavy duty pity party. My life stinks and I want to die and I'm out of here and I don't want to deal with this anymore. He was such a key figure in God's plan for that time that God did not send anybody. God decided, I'm going to be the party pooper here. I'm going to encourage him. God stepped in and put a stop to his party. Instead of sending somebody, God did it himself. And I think that's pretty powerful. God steps in, and sometimes God has to do it himself. Especially when we are at a point where we won't listen to anybody and we won't let anybody encourage us. Sometimes we're there and nobody can really penetrate that wall that we have lifted up because we are just so out of it and so tired that God has to step in and, hey, what's up? Because God can break through anything, any barrier you put up. He's going to get to you and he's going to talk to you and he's going to be real in your life. And that's what he did to Elijah. And notice that the first thing God did to him was not rebuke him. How dare you want to die? What do you mean you've had enough? Get up, wimp! What did God do? God fed him twice. God gave him food and water. And he fell asleep. A little while later, God woke him up and said, here's some more food and water. Hey, wow, that's a strange way to encourage somebody. What does that tell you about Elijah? He wasn't even eating. He was so discouraged that he wasn't even eating. So not only was he super exhausted and tired of everything, but on top of that, he wasn't eating. So he had no physical energy left to do anything. When we get discouraged, we often lose interest in eating or taking care of ourselves. We can't allow that to happen. I know that different people react differently. When I'm discouraged, I don't stop eating. I eat more. That's my personality. But that's a way to stop taking care of yourself because you're hurting yourself when you eat. You're hurting yourself if you stop eating. You're hurting yourself if you overeat and you binge because you feel depressed or discouraged. Some people stop bathing. Some people stop dressing. They give up. And that's where Elijah was. And the first thing God did was, hey, let's take care of your physical needs. You need to rest, go ahead and rest. You need to eat, here's food. We're not even going to talk about the miracle, about where all the food came from and everything like that. Just God dealt with his physical needs first. He was in no condition to talk to him until he had put some food in him and the guy had gotten some rest. Then God could start working with him. Apparently his exhaustion was overwhelming. Then when finally God was able to deal with him, God asked him, hey, what are you doing here? Because he went to the mountain of God. In other words, he went to the place that they knew that God spoke to people. It's the same place that God had spoken to Moses and the burning bush and all of that. It was the place where they all knew, hey, this is God's mountain. Here where God gave the Ten Commandments and all of this stuff. This is the place. So he says, I need to talk to God. So I'm going to go where God's at. So he walks to this place and God says, okay, what are you doing here? Like, what do you want? Talk to me. And you get his complaint, and he gives him a complaint twice. God asks him twice, and twice he gives him the same answer. Says, God, let me show you, let me talk to you about what's happening. Let me enlighten you, God. As if God didn't know what was happening. God, you know what? I have zealously served you. I've zealously served the Lord God Almighty. But the people of Israel, they have broken their covenant with you, torn down your altars, and killed every one of my your prophets. I'm the only one left, and now they're trying to kill me too. Twice he tells God, this is my sad story. What is he telling God? Hey, God, I did what you asked me to do, but the people just, they're not responding. That's what he's telling God. Hey, I did everything you asked me to do. I served you zealously. I gave it everything I had. What's the point? What for? Nobody responded. Look at what the people are doing. They're a mess. It made no difference in their lives. That's what he's telling them. And the problem we need to understand here is that when your expectations aren't met, you get discouraged. It's very discouraging when you're expecting something and it doesn't happen. And he was expecting that he was going to do what God called him to do, and the people were going to repent, and there was going to be a revival, and everything was going to be awesome, and it wasn't. That can be very discouraging. In other words, he's telling God, I can understand if I were not doing what you told me. I could understand if I messed up. I could understand if I disobeyed you and the people didn't react. But hey, God, I did everything you wanted me to. And they still didn't react. They didn't respond. When things don't make sense, it often leads us to discouragement. Because that, I'm sure, didn't make sense to Elijah. It didn't make sense. How come the people are turning from you? If they've seen these miracles and these things that you've done, you've used me to show them your power, and they still don't believe. And then he sits down and says, and they killed all your prophets. Now they're trying to kill me. Danger and fear also lead to discouragement. Danger and fear often lead to discouragement as well. It's very discouraging to know somebody's trying to kill you. It's one of those duh. It's very discouraging to be fearful, to constantly be afraid. It's very discouraging. You get tired of that really quickly. That gets old really fast, to be afraid and to be afraid and to be afraid. And that's where he was at. It's easy to lose sight of God's protection when all the things look so bad. It's like, Elijah, hello. Like, he just spared you, man. He just sent fire from heaven and showed that you were the man. And all of these people, you killed 400 of those prophets. What are you afraid of? Like, God is with you. What are you afraid of? Who's going to touch you? But in his discouragement, he couldn't see that. In his discouragement, you know what he looked at? They killed so-and-so, and he was a prophet. And they killed so-and-so, and he was a prophet. And that other prophet that lived down the street, they killed him too. There aren't any prophets left. I'm the last one. And guess what? If they killed all of them, what are they going to do to me? Going to kill me too? Just lost sight of it, of reality, of what was happening. And then God responds to him. And God ignores the whole deal with, they're going to kill me and I'm in danger. God, like, he doesn't even address that. Look what God tells him, verse 15. Go back the same way you came. Travel to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you arrive there, I want you to anoint this guy and anoint the other guy and anoint the other guy. And I want you to train up Elisha because he's going to be your successor. In other words, what's God telling him? Hey, get up and get back the same way you came. Stop this pity party thing. Let's go. And I'm not going to send you somewhere else. No, you're going back to where you were. But that's where the lady wanted to kill me. I don't care. You're going back to where I'm selling to you. Get up. Get off your butt. Get off that pity party thing. Stop crying. Get up and go. You got work to do. This is God telling him, hey, I'm not done with you yet. You're not done yet. You know some of the stuff you need to do, Elijah? Because Elijah's saying, what else can I do? I just killed all the prophets of Baal, and that's it. I'm done. No, 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 you're not. You're going to anoint the next king of Aram. That's the guy I want you to anoint. And so, you're going to anoint him the next king of Israel. And by the way, you're going to go find a guy named Elisha, and you're going to put your coat over him, and you're going to make him your follower, your protege. You're going to mentor him, and he's going to succeed you when you're not here anymore.
You want to die? That's cool, but you can't die yet because there's nobody to succeed you. So you're going to prepare Elijah so that when you're not here anymore, somebody's going to continue doing the work that I need to do. So in other words, hey, we're not even close to being done. You got a lot to go. And by the way, just a heads up, Elijah, you're not the only one left. Who told you that? Who told you that? There's at least 7,000 people that have not bent their knee to Baal, and they haven't worshipped him, and they're still faithful to me. I'm sure his jaw dropped. 7,000? He thought he was the only one left. So a couple of quick lessons there and we'll be done. When we serve God, he's the one that decides when it's over. When you're a servant of God, he's the one that decides when you're done. Until he decides that, you're not done yet. I'm not done yet. If you're still around, guess what? You're not done yet. God has something he wants you to do. He probably has a lot of things he wants you to do. So there's no room to sit down and feel sorry for yourself. You got to get up and you got to do it. And by the way, you're not alone. It's very discouraging to think you're alone. It's very encouraging to think that you're the only one going through this. It's very discouraging to think that you're suffering and nobody else is. It's just you. No, no, no. If it's about suffering, trust me, you're not alone. We have brothers and sisters in the whole planet that are suffering. And a lot worse than we are. They're being thrown in jail. They're being killed. Their families are being tortured because they serve God. So you're not alone in suffering for God, for the cause of God. And if you're talking about people that are faithful to God, you're not alone. There's a large remnant of people in this planet that are faithful to God. They love him. They live for him. They serve him. And they're going to spend an eternity with him. You're not alone. And if you're feeling alone because there's nobody to work with you, hey, listen, God is with you. You're not alone. There's no realm in which you are alone. God is with you. So don't be discouraged about the whole thing about being alone. So in conclusion tonight, from the first story, we must not allow discouragement to make us lose focus of the big picture. What's the big picture? The big picture is that God is good. That God blesses us. That God looks out for us. The big picture is that there are people that God puts in our lives that help us, that love us, that protect us. God has angels working in our favor. I mean, the big picture is God is in control and everything's going to be all right. That's the big picture. Don't lose sight of that. David lost sight of that. And from that story, we looked at when you're discouraged, it's going to discourage others. So stop. Discouragement keeps you from recognizing what others have done for us. Stop. Look around. See what people are doing for you. Sometimes God places people in your lives that can see the big picture. Listen to them when they talk to you. You know, learn from David's reaction. Don't get angry at the people that confront you with a reality check. Take it. Accept it. Learn from David. Have a teachable spirit. When somebody tries to help you out of that pity party, let them. Let them help you. Learn. Have a teachable spirit. Don't fight it. And do like David did. Refocus on the big picture and get up and get going. You didn't sin by getting discouraged, but staying there, that's not good. Get up and go. Get up and go. Get up and go. And from the second story, we must not allow discouragement to make us want to quit everything. You can't quit. In this ministry, and in what God has called you to do in this kingdom that we work for, in this king that we work for, we don't quit. And he doesn't fire us. So we're good. We're with him. I don't want to use the word stuck because it's not stuck. It's an incredible privilege. But we're stuck with it. I mean, we're in it to stay. There's no quitting here. And we got to take that out of our mind. We learned also that you got to be careful with exhaustion. Physical exhaustion is not good. It leads to discouragement. We got to be careful with, you know, that we not become overwhelmed with things because we're exhausted. Exhaustion leads to overwhelm. Sometimes God is going to step in and he's going to be the one to encourage you. And sometimes it's going to be somebody else. And sometimes it's going to be a message on the radio or a song. Or somebody you don't even know, a total stranger, giving you a word of encouragement. But God will get to you. God wants you to lift up. God wants you to stand up. He doesn't want you to stay there on the ground. When your expectations aren't met, that leads to discouragement. So, hey,
Take a look at your expectations. What are our expectations? Our expectations ought to be obedient to God, period. Anything beyond that, God hasn't told you it's going to happen. You just be obedient to God. That's all you need to do. Set your expectations so you're not disappointed. And when things don't make sense, that leads to discouragement. So when things don't make sense, leave it to God. It makes sense to Him. He knows what He's doing. Trust Him in that. Don't feel fear and when danger is around. Trust God. Don't let fear and danger just totally, paralyze you. Yes, fear is normal, and yes, God has built us to flee from danger, but you can trust Him. When things are out of your control, you can still trust Him. He's in control. Okay, don't lose sight of that. And when we serve God, He's the one that decides when we're done, not us. He's the one that's going to, if He's kept us around, us because He's using us, and He's got more for us to do, and you're not alone. A lot of lessons to learn from these two guys. There are other people and other tremendous lessons on discouragement and encouragement that we can learn. Maybe in another message, we'll cover a few more. But these two are powerful lessons in dealing with discouragement. Let's stand up tonight.